Welcome to Season 2 of Inflammation Nation. My name is Peter Boyd. Inflammation Nation is a podcast from Arthritis Ireland aimed at increasing awareness and understanding of arthritis and related conditions. So you're very welcome to this episode of Inflammation Nation. And joining me today is Dr. Mary Canavan, who's an assistant professor in immunology in the School of Medicine, School of Biochemistry and Immunology in Trinity College. And Dr. Viviana Marziola is a research assistant professor in the Molecular Rheumatology Group in the School of Medicine in Trinity College, Dublin. Bit of a mouthful, lots of different hats being worn, but first of all, can I say, Mary and Viviana, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, Peter.
Like I said, lots of different hats, lots of different titles, lots of different activities. If I went through them all now, we'd probably use up all of the time that we have for the episode. So I'll start with those titles, and we'll branch out from there as we go on throughout the discussion. And also, not to scare anyone off, there's lots of words that I use there. I'm not really sure if I understand every single one of them. So so we will try and explain them to people as we go through.
Absolutely.
As well. So I'll start off and say, you know, it's all about research and investigations at the moment. If I could turn to you first, Mary, maybe, what are you currently working on and, you know, that would be of real interest to our audience?
Yeah, so I suppose what I'm really trying to understand now is there a point in time before someone actually develops rheumatoid arthritis, before their disease actually becomes apparent and before they're in pain? Is there a point that we can actually identify those people very, very early before they actually get joint symptoms and before they feel unwell? So that's really kind of the main focus of my research at the moment. And ideally, what we hope would happen in years to come, if we're really successful, is that, is there some way we could look at things that are in the blood of people who are highly susceptible of having rheumatoid arthritis? And by examining them in the blood, we might be able to actually have a clear indication that this person is really likely to develop the disease. And the benefit of that is that actually we know that if we treat patients very, very early before they actually get this inflammation in their joints, they respond a lot better to treatment and their disease course is obviously a lot less severe. So I'm really trying to understand the immunology. So really how our immune system very, very early on starts to mistakenly attack our joints when it shouldn't. And so my research and my research group is really trying to focus on that and see if we can identify people who are at high risk of developing rheumatoid arthritis, can we then treat them early so that actually they have better better disease control?
Yeah, and that's the real issue for people living with rheumatoid arthritis in particular, is disease control and better outcomes in the long term, and pain, as you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what we're all looking for and hoping for.
Exactly, yeah. So that's kind of, you know, I think initially when I first started in this field, we were kind of looking at patients who had established disease, which was obviously really, really tough because these people have been through a lot of treatments and, you know, they're in severe pain and they suffer from disease flares. But more and more, we've started to learn that actually there could be something very early on that we might be able to target or identify. And obviously, that's really the holy grail, because, you know, that's what we want. We don't want people to be diagnosed with rheumatoid. If we can catch them before they actually get the disease, it would be great.
That would be fantastic, and really hope that we can get to that stage at one point.
Exactly.
And Viviane, if I could turn to you and ask you a similar question. Obviously, remembering again that we don't have people with maybe a scientific background listening in, but what are you currently working on?
So in my group, we are interested to see the difference that occurs between rheumatoid arthritis patient and psoriatic arthritis patient. So as you may know, they might have some common clinical manifestation, but we have discovered that the molecular cellular level, they might be very different disease. And, you know, with the fact that, you know, for therapy targeting, it's important to know what differs them to give them a better treatment. So in my group, we work with the innate immune system, which is the first line of defense. So these cells like will attack as soon as we are intercourse with the infection or during inflammation. So we are trying to see how this cell develop into more specialized cells and how this is different between the two diseases. So we already seen that there are some differences. So we are trying to understand more the molecular differences in these two diseases, which obviously with the ultimate goal to try to understand, to find a molecule which may be significantly different RA versus PSA or vice versa, to try to target specifically those molecules for a better treatment.
Okay, and again, looking for better treatment for people. And if I could ask then, you know, just to give people an idea of the length of time that these research projects take, and when did this begin? What's the length of time that it will take to get some outcomes or maybe some interim goals established from these projects?
So I suppose, you know, every project could last a couple of years, 2-3 years to discover a small step forward in the right direction. Remember, one of my mentors when I started in this field always used to say the science is about discovering one small thing at a time and move forward your knowledge. So of course, like, you know, it's all about integrating the science, the discovery from your group, from other group, and try to move toward a better understanding of the disease. So of course, I'm not aiming to have a drug in the next year, but, you know, even if we can reconvert some of the drugs that are already in use, which might be useful for inflammatory arthritis in patient, or just try to develop a small molecule which will be more efficient in this disease, that will be a good outcome.
A good outcome. Okay. And it's all about, like you say, just those small steps and things like that. We used to have a saying within Arthritis Ireland, this small things make a big difference. And it is all about those small steps. If I could step away and maybe look back at something kind of previous to your research now, maybe I'll turn to yourself, Mary. Did you always want to be a researcher?
I don't think I did, because I don't think I knew what that was. You know, I think when you're younger and you say you're a scientist, I always thought of, you know, films and thought, that's not what I want to do. Wear the white coat and I don't know what they're doing in the lab. So it's something I think that isn't very approachable sometimes when you're younger. It's not a career that you understand. Well, I certainly didn't understand. So I never did science for my junior cert, which is obviously a big flaw. I should have really thought that I could have done that, but I just felt that it was a little bit too complicated and wouldn't be able for it. But then I don't know where it came from, but all of a sudden learning about biology, the idea of understanding, you know, how my heart is like pumping blood around my body and how my joints moving and like, how do I get sick? How do I not get sick? I just thought that was just so cool. And so that's really where I kind of just followed my interest in a subject rather than pursuit of a career, if that makes sense. You know, it was more, I really like this topic. I'm going to go on to college and maybe learn more about it. And, you know, if you'd asked me when I was doing my degree, would I be doing what I'm doing now? I would have said no, because I would have just saw those people in these roles and thought, I'm never going to be able to do that, you know? But it's just incremental steps that, like, I learned more and then realized, actually, maybe I have a question that I'd like to ask in a lab, or maybe I have a question, why does this happen in the body? And maybe I can design an experiment to kind of figure that out. And that's kind of what drew me into the career. And I suppose what's kept me is really, I love the science, but I love the people, you know, and it's not just the people I work with. It's actually, I feel that even though it's very, very small, and it is very small what we do, I feel like that hopefully there's a point in time where the work will have some impact, even if it's a small level, on someone who actually suffers from this disease. So I think that's a huge kind of pull for me to stay and for me to work in this area, is that I feel like there's potential to have impact in what you do. So that's, I think, you know, obviously a really great thing. So that's why I enjoy it.
Yeah, no, and it's really interesting to hear that, because, you know, there's so much movement across careers now. You know, people don't go into the civil service and end up there and stay there for 40 years. And it's just interesting to know how you end up there. And I suppose people would be interested to know, is it the science or is it the rheumatology that really, you know, interests you or grabs you?
Yeah, do you know, I think for me, anything would grab me, in that it's probably, the foundation is probably the science. You know, if you sat down and wanted to talk about multiple sclerosis or cancer, I'd be really interested and want to know the biology behind it, because I want to understand our bodies and how we get sick. So it definitely was, it initially was the science, but over the last few years, because I've worked so much in this field and, you know, I've seen lots of really great developments, and I've seen kind of where we lack and what we're not doing great and what we are doing great. It's really the rheumatology now, that I would never move away from that, because I suppose I've just become ingrained in it now, and I just really enjoy that aspect. And I feel like I've worked a lot in that field, that there's potential in the future to maybe have a little bit of an impact in that area.
Great. And speaking on behalf of the patients, I hope you do.
I hope I do as well. I hope I haven't sold myself too high there now, but hopefully.
We're all holding it against you. And to yourself, Viviana, just if I could ask you the same question, just to get a bit of background, how did you end up as a researcher?
The Italian educational system is a bit different through the Irish one. So we actually study every subject until we actually decide college. So you're really exposed to everything. So I really liked arts and I really liked science. But I really liked the science per se, a bit as Mary was saying. So there was a period I wanted to be in the field of astronomy. Like, I love space, I love the stars. I still want to be an astronaut, watch the space.
Yeah.
But then, I was a bit scared about all the physics, the chemistry. And I was like, I'm not very good at that. So I moved more into the field of biology. So I did a degree in biotechnology, which... in Italy, it's very broad again. Like, it gave a bit the base of all the immunology, biology, chemistry. So, but then I started to do a lot of lab work for my bachelor, for my master, and I started to discover that was the part I loved more. So, there was 3 months mandatory of training, and that would be like, I did a year because I was like, I just like after class going to lab and just try to discover things. So that's where I start to shape, okay, I like to do this. Mm-hmm. I might pursue in this career. But again, as Mary was saying, like you always feel like you never reach there. So it's all a step by step. Like, mm-hmm. I'll do this and then I see what happened after. And okay. I'm still a bit in this philosophy, I think. Like, yeah. You never feel like you've reached. You always feel like I'll see what's coming for me after.
Afterwards. Okay. And is that kind of, I noticed, from your career path and that you've moved around institutes around Europe and different places. Is that kind of a reason for that, maybe?
It is. Like, you see, when I did my PhD, I wasn't really sure that I wanted to do necessary academic career. So I decided to do it abroad to gain also the experience abroad. And obviously I chose Dublin also because a bit was in a, I could only speak English. So it was like, and not even that good if you ask me at that time. And actually work in the field of rheumatology with Dr. Emily Evelyn Murphy in UCD. So I started to get very interested in the field. And then, I moved a bit around. I always say in the area of inflammation, that's my key interest, but not necessarily always apply to rheumatic disease. I then came back to Dublin in 2017 in the group of Ursula Fearon, and that's where, I found my home. And I think it's a very interesting field from a scientist. For a bit what we were discussing earlier a bit as well, the fact that the body attack yourself and to understand what's happening, why the body's doing that to yourself when they should actually protect you. And so I think, I feel I found my home, but I'm also interested in everything. Like, as scientists, you never feel like that's all your topic. Like, somebody talks to me about anything, I will be so keen to understand more. So I think that's a bit the beauty of the job, that your brain really gets very enthusiastic about discoveries.
It's an inquisitive mind rather than anything else.
Exactly, okay. Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned a couple of things there. You mentioned your home here, your Ursula Fearon and the chair of rheumatology here in Ireland, yeah. and the field within Dublin and things like that. Is there kind of it's a centre of excellence for research here in Dublin. Yeah. And is there a particular reason or are those the reasons, as you mentioned, the equipment, the facilities, the other people that are here? Does that lead to it?
I feel like, I really feel home in the mentality of Irish research, because probably, for people that are from here, they don't realize how it could be in other country. And I'm not saying it's bad or anything. It's obviously a different experience. There are two really things that I love about working in Ireland. One is the working culture. So there is a bit more balance between work-life balance. So you are a bit, not expect work all the time, every time, which is a bit what happened in other countries where I worked. And I really like the collaborative nature of the job. You see, in Ireland, there is not much hierarchy for what I found. Like, you learn from the expert, independent if that expert is a PhD student or is a professor. You just learn from whoever has something to give to you. Mm-hmm. And I found that's beautiful because it really integrates knowledge and sharing of knowledge. And we are very lucky because we work very close contact with hospitals and clinicians. And that's really give us this point of view of the medical part of the disease, which obviously it won't be our strong suit. Like, so we learn from them, we learn from each other. I really like this collaborative nature. Regarding also the instrument, like you were saying, like obviously Ireland is very developing that. And I feel in Ireland, if you want to do an experiment, you'll find a lab that has the instrument that you need. And that's not in every country. I suppose also because it's a small country, it's easier to collaborate also across different institutions. But I don't think there was never a lack of, say, I cannot do this because I don't know where to do it. I don't think that ever happened here, which is beautiful, which is what I like.
Excellent, excellent. And would you agree, Mary? Yeah,
yeah, I was just going to say, like, you know, here in Dublin with the Centre of Excellence, one of the reasons why I love it is there's lots of technical, you know, expertise there, but actually it's down to the people. I think the people, you can see that they love what they do, and that's all you need, because they're so passionate and enthusiastic about it. You know, they're there because they love the job. It's not just a job to them, you know, and I think when you work with people like that, everybody builds everyone else up, and you want to actually work, you know, and you want to actually get those breakthroughs and make those little steps forward. And I think that that's one of the real strengths. And, you know, especially even with Arthritis Ireland, you know, I know that you guys support research across the country, and I kind of do feel like for us to make that little bit of impact, we do need that national collaboration that, you know, it's not just one person in this little lab. And maybe they discover something that no one ever even hears about it. You know, it's the fact that now we have these channels between the hospitals, between the patients, between, you know, pharmaceutical companies, so that when that moment comes and hopefully there's a breakthrough, it doesn't just lie there, you know, it actually gets out and might actually have that impact. So yeah, I think that's one of the real strengths that we have in Dublin.
Yeah, and that leads me on to another question that I wanted to ask was, how do you disseminate those results and those breakthroughs that you do get? How do you get the word out?
Yeah, you know, it's actually really challenging, I would say, because the currency, we always say in research, is that you write a paper, like a scientific paper, and other scientists will review it and other scientists at conferences will talk about it. And that's great in one respect because it gets the science out to the scientists, but it doesn't really get the impact out to the people who might actually want to hear about it. Mm-hmm. So there is other ways in which kind of we do like press releases from the college, but I think that's a bit of an area that we have to work on because sometimes, and it might even come across even on the podcast, but sometimes the language we use isn't that accessible and we just don't know that maybe what we're saying is not being received the way we're saying, do you know, the message isn't getting across. So I think one of the ways that we've tried to kind of tackle that now is that we've ran kind of workshops around the country where, you know, we'll go to different parts of Ireland. We've done this with Ursula Fearon, where, you know, we'll have a clinician who'll present and talk about, you know, this is the type of the disease. We'll have a scientist and then we'll often have a patient and they'll get up as well. And it's a really holistic view at looking at the field and also being able to get that data and get those results out to the people that actually are probably going to want to hear about it. And also the people who are going to want to maybe say it to their consultants when they go to their next appointment, you know. Yeah. So we definitely have to improve the way we share the kind of data and the results that we get. And the other side of that, I suppose, is that we have to be careful that we don't overemphasize what we've discovered because we think it might be great, but we can't say that this is going to be a cure either, do you know? So you have to be really careful that you're being really honest with what you've discovered, but also being realistic that it's not going to maybe change the face of this disease overnight, do you know? Yeah. So we've definitely got a way to go, but I think a lot of the patient involvement in research has really changed the way we disseminate these results and kind of gets them to the right audience, I think.
Yeah, and that brings me on again to patient involvement, because that's such a huge part, you know, across whether it's clinicians or research. And if a patient, you know, wants to get involved in your research, say Viviana, how do they go about it?
So I suppose in Dublin, we have the very big luck to be associated with two main hospitals, which are clinical hospital and they recruit patients. So this will be St. Vincent University Hospital with Professor Veal. And then we are also linked with the Tala Hospital with Dr. Mullan. So we are lucky in that because when patients go to their routine follow-up, they're asked to participate in the study, which is completely volunteer, but most of them will, because obviously, you know, there is hopefully a return back in terms of discovery and improvement of their disease. Nationally, there is the Arthritis Research Coalition, which has been established. So I suppose the thing is to go to your rheumatologist and discuss that you want to be included in any of this study, and they can link with hospital that at the moment recruit, or they can start the recruiting in their own hospital. So I will say it still has to go through the rheumatology. Obviously, I cannot recruit, as a scientist, we cannot recruit patients directly.
Directly, okay. And does it depend then on the type of study that you're doing, what kind of samples are taken, the different things that are needed per project?
So for routine follow-up clinic, we obtain blood from patient. And as Mary was saying at the very beginning, we try to work a lot in blood because it will be ideal to discover something in circulation in the blood of the patient, which will be a marker that tells us a patient will transit to a more severe disease or a patient has this specific feature of the disease. So that's ultimate goal. So why we work a lot with blood. But then through our arthroscopy program, we also obtain synovial tissue from the knee of the patient and also synovial fluid. And these are very important because they really allow us to look what happened at the site of inflammation, how the cell are regulated. And, you know, I can already tell you they are very dysregulated in respect to even what happened to the blood of the same patient. So, of course, like, you know, that give us a picture of what's happening at the moment into the tissue, into the joint of the patient. So, yeah, routinely we will get blood, and then on arthroscopy, which for us happens every Monday through Professor Ville, we obtain tissue and fluid if the patient agree, of course, too.
Did you want to add something there, Mary?
Yeah, I was just going to agree with Viviana there and also say that, you know, there's workshop, like irrespective to the you know, donating your blood and maybe donating, you know, a human sample to these studies. There is also, you know, workshops that Arthritis Ireland and Ursula Fearon have ran around the country. And I think, you know, that's also another great way of patients to get involved in research, where we really just want their opinions. We want their voice. We want to hear their experiences. Because often, you know, I think sometimes as scientists, we say, you know, one of the key things that affects these patients is A, B, and C. And then you talk to the patients and they say, well, actually, the greatest issue is pain, or the greatest issue is flare. And nobody's talking about that, you know. So we can never get that insight without the patient involvement. So even if you have no interest or desire or understanding, we don't want to contribute in a sense of giving a biological sample, like your experience, your voice, anything that you have to say in any way is completely new information to the scientists, because they don't know what it's like from morning new to night to live with this disease. So I suppose there's also a really, you know, great way of patients to get involved from just their own sharing their experiences, you know, in these workshops, I think would be also really great.
So does that really encourage patients, you know, if they see even a questionnaire or a survey or anything that's coming out, to really share their voice and share their opinion to really help with your research?
Yeah. And we've actually done a survey as well, kind of around the country. And it was a great way of capturing, you know, patient experiences that I feel we hadn't really
predicted.
Yeah. And, you know, when patients go into the rheumatologist, we know like time is precious, and they might not necessarily get the time to kind of talk about some of the issues that they're having there. And we kind of discovered from this survey that actually maybe the communication between the rheumatologist and the patient needed to be improved slightly, and that there was cross wires. And so patients were coming away being not fully understanding their own disease, and it's their disease. They're entitled to understand every element of it because they have to live with it. So I think, you know, I'd really encourage patients to get involved and to, you know, answer these surveys or go to these workshops. And I suppose we just want to kind of emphasize to them that their voice is so valuable. It's not this situation where you have these scientists and they make all the decisions. It's actually, you know, we want to make sure that the questions we're asking are really the questions that you want answers to. Otherwise, what's the point, you know? So I suppose that's the real value of the patient input.
And one final question on patients and their involvement. Do they have to have a certain level of inflammation, or does their disease have to be a certain severity or aggressivity before they can get involved? Or would you take patients at any level?
So we could usually take patients at any level, because, you know, when we're affiliated to the hospitals, we're looking for people at all stages of the disease, you know, really, really early. But also if you're a patient that's been on lots of medications and you can't, you know, your disease has been flaring consistently, you know, we want to understand all sides of it. So I think that's also a really good strength of the rheumatology group and research here in Ireland, is that we haven't, you know, pinpointed our research to one specific element of the disease. It's that it's all encompassing, trying to understand it from the very, very start to even kind of the more end stages. So, you know, if patients are willing and enthusiastic, I think there's always there's room for involvement.
I just wanted to add to that another cohort that we're always interested in is this patient that is still not treated, and then we follow them during the treatment to understand the one that don't respond, why they're not responding to that specific treatment. And that's allow us to look at the molecular level if something's different from the one that responded. So we follow them at every 3 or 6 months when they go for follow-up clinic to see if their makeup of the cell has changed over time in the responder versus the non-responders.
So if we move on and talk, I mentioned at the beginning that you both wear multiple hats. You have lots of different calls in your time. You've lots of different things that you're involved with, lots of different projects, and a number of different titles even. Is that something that's essential for the modern researcher?
I suppose where you want to reach life and what is your passion. I think most of the things we do are not essential for a researcher, but for me are essential for my personal growth. I do things because I'm passionate about them. I don't do things because I want to pin something down on my CV. Like, I always tend to get involved in things I really enjoy. For instance, we were discussing about all the PPI work. That's something I really enjoy doing because I really like to hear the voice of the patient. How can I integrate that in the research to have a more clear question, a more clear understanding of what's the need at the moment? So I suppose, yeah, it's, you know, we also like a lot to disseminate our data. We like to go to conference, talk to other scientists. These are all things that, you know, help a scientist to become a better scientist. But I wouldn't say it's mandatory. It's all about what is your aspiration, where you want to reach life, and if you have passion for that or not. At least that's how I see it. I don't know if you would agree, Mary.
I would say something very similar in that sometimes opportunities arise and people ask, you know, would you like to do this extra role, or would you like to go on this committee, or would you like to do this? And more often than not, we would say yes, because we think that sounds really interesting and I'll get to actually talk to some really great people and I'll learn a lot. But it does mean that, you know, you do split yourself across a lot of different and varied tasks, which is challenging. And I don't think any of us could really say that we've got that balance sorted. And that's kind of true for a lot of careers, I think. But I suppose once it's stemmed in what Viviana was saying, once it's stemmed in your passion and your interest, you know, you're not doing it to tick the box and say, you know, I'm on all of these things and do all these committees. It's more, this is going to actually help me because I'm going to learn a lot from it. So I think that's kind of why we do it. But the how we do it is still still a work in progress.
Yeah. I was going to ask about how you make sure you're not overcommitted and manage your time. But looking at your faces, I don't think that's going to be something you can answer.
No, I'm still trying to figure it out. And there's still times where I've double booked on something or I have to do something in the evenings because I haven't balanced my time very well. But I think because it's, you know, it stems from a place of you're doing something you enjoy, so it doesn't necessarily always feel like work. You know, when you know I actually like doing this, so it's not hard work.
I suppose, you know, just if I can add to that, like it's also, I mean, I know it can be stressful, overwhelming, but it's a bit the beauty of the job that no day is equal to the other. So yeah. you know, I plan personally what I want to achieve in a week, but I get on a Tuesday that my week has already changed, and sometimes throughout the day I'm planning to do something and change. So the important is to prioritize multitasking, and that's, I suppose, a quality that every researcher has, because it's very important in that. And as Mary was saying, like, you know, you don't really see that always as a work, because sometimes you just do things because you enjoy them, but it can be a bit overwhelming at times. Like, we're not going to deny that.
No.
No, it's certainly overwhelming. And I can imagine trying to put in calls for funding, grants and different things like that. They all take up a certain proportion of your day that maybe just disappears.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes we feel like you write so many grants to try get the money that you have to try then get the time to do the research, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's constantly going. But I suppose the great thing is that in this community, you can't do it on your own, you know, and that's why we work with this collaborative team that everyone's willing to help out, and I can look after a student, I can help you write this section, and because we're all kind of working towards the same goal, I suppose, so that makes it a little bit easier.
That's so true, yeah. We always try to share the load, and, you know, like if we know somebody particularly busy week, we try to take something away from that person, and that will come back to you the week after when you are busy. Like, we always try to help each other, which is the beauty of the group and the whole team per se.
And that's fantastic. And we're all helping each other to get to that end goal, which is to get a cure, mm-hmm. which I think, if I heard correctly at the beginning of this episode, you said is coming next year.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe don't quote me on that. It could be 18 months because of COVID. There's been a few delays, you know.
Well, we understand. And I think our audience and listeners will appreciate that it is something that takes time. But with that insight that you've given us into the life of a researcher and what's involved and how they can get involved also, I think is something that we all really appreciate. So thank you very much for giving your time this morning.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Peter, for inviting us.
So that is Dr. Mary Canavan and Dr. Viviana Marzioli joining us today on Inflammation Nation. That's all from this episode of Inflammation Nation. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Stitcher, or as they always say, wherever you get your podcasts. For further information about arthritis, you can visit our website, arthritisireland.ie, or contact our helpline on 0818 252 846. See you next time. Inflammation Nation is supported by Pfizer.